Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Erevin, daf Pei Vav. We're starting on the Mishnah on Pei Amud Beis. So we are now speaking about residential homes. Okay, it's the eighth parak of Erevin. We are jumping around between Eruv Tchum and Eruv Chatzeros. We are now talking Eruv Chatzeros. So the first Mishnah in the parak talked about Eruv Tchum, but we get to bounce a little bit in this eighth parak, kind of like a hybrid. We are now speaking about what houses actually need to contribute to the Eruv. So the Mishnah says, "Anosin es eruvo." Now, mind you, by the way, the following equation is going to be working for the Mishnah, and that's the following, meaning that the houses that need to give an eruv are the houses that are qualified to receive the eruv. The houses that don't need to give an eruv are also houses that are not qualified to actually host the eruv. So, "Anosin es eruvo bebay shar chsadro mipresasin eruv." So, let's say there are houses, but they're not real houses. Bay shar, a gatehouse. Right, you walk into some of these gated communities. So the first house you stumble upon is a gatehouse. That's not a residential home, right? It's structurally a house, but it's not a residential home, and so therefore it doesn't need to contribute to the eruv, and also it cannot be the host of the eruv as well. Same thing is true with a beishar nachsadra nemerpesach sachsadra, basically a house with no walls. So basically a house on stilts. I don't really mean that. Meaning, it's a patio. A patio, no walls around it. Okay, it's a tent. And a merpesa is just a simple balcony. So, eruv of all these things are not going to, by putting the eruv over there, the eruv will simply not work. It's not considered as if the eruv was placed in a bais, in a dira. The hadarsha, I mean, oster alaf. So, and conversely, the opposite is also true. Much like it can't host the Eruv, it also doesn't need to give to the Eruv. So that means anyone who is living in these houses, which again, you wouldn't want to live in these houses, but anyone living in these houses don't need to contribute to the Eruv. Beis HaTevin, Beis HaBakar, Beis HaEitzim, Beis HaOtzaros, HaRez HaEruv, VeHadash HaMoser. So then the Mishnah turns its attention to residential homes, which are slightly unusual places to live, but are homes nevertheless. If I have any type of storehouse, storehouse for animals, storehouse for wood, just a general storehouse in general. So I raise the eruv. So all these would be, in other words, if I put the eruv in these houses, the eruv would be good. V'hadar shamoser, and subsequently, that would mean that if anyone lives there, so that means now that is a residential home, right? Most people are not going to be living in the barn with the animals, but if you live in the barn with the animals, that's now considered a base dira, and now you need to be a contributing member of the chatzir. Rav Yehuda Amrei Miesham Tfisas Yad Shal Balabais and Osin. Rav Yehuda gives the following rule. If you have Tfisas Yad, meaning, let's say there are a lot of homes in this chatzir, and I have a hand, we'll define what that means better as we go through the Gemara, but I have a hand in somebody else's house. If I have a hand in his house at Tfisas Yad, right, obviously we're not talking literally, so that means then that that house basically is my house. Right, you know the expression, your house is mine, su casa is mi casa. Right. So your house becomes my house if I have a tfisas yad in that house. Again, we're going to better define what that means as we go through the Gemara. So that now means then that we're already unified. The whole purpose of an eruv is to unify everyone together, to incorporate everyone together, so that we're all living in the same house. But if I already have a tfisas yad in your house, so that means that basically now that's my house. So we're already unified, therefore there's no need for the two of us to contribute to the eruv. As well, again, if all there's in the chatzar just me and you, so then we're good. There's no need for an eruv. I'm Rav Yehuda Breid, Rav Shmuel.
Why in the first three places, if somebody does live there and live them in permanently, why isn't it?
It's not. It's just simply not. These aren't. We'd say, but I guess we'll throw around a svar of batla daita etzel kol adam, meaning it's not the place where normally people live. I mean that's the simple pshat in the Mishnah. Okay, we start with the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda Breid, Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, Kol Makom Sha'amru Hadar Sham Eino Oser Hanos Din Esei Ruvo Eino Eruv. So again, we go over this equation again. That if you don't need to contribute at the same time, also that means that you can't host the eruv as well. With the exception, Chutz Mi Beishar Diyachid, except for a Beishar Diyachid. Right, the gatehouse of an individual. What exactly does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. First Rashi in the Gemara, Chutz Mi Beishar D'Yachid, D'Chaser Shel Yachid, U'Masnitzin BeBeishar D'Chaser D'Rabbi Maskina. Oh, kind of depends what kind of chaser we're talking about. If we're talking about where it's a Beishar, for many houses. So basically, the gatehouse is a gatehouse, right? So in other words, so we had this idea come up early in the Masechta. So if I have a number of people living in the chatzer, and there's one gatehouse that everyone has to go through in order to get into the chatzer, the gatehouse is just simply a gatehouse. It's not considered a residential home, and so that means then that it doesn't have to give to the Erev, and it can't host the Erev. However, if it's a Beishar de Yachid, meaning, as you walk through the gatehouse, what is there? Just but one other house. So now, the gatehouse is considered a residential home, meaning it only has the status of a gatehouse only if it opens up to multiple homes. But if it only opens up to one home, so then it's not considered a gatehouse, and therefore, A, it has to contribute to the Erev, and B, it could also host the Erev as well. Now, even though, let's say you have a house that's not qualified to neither give to the Erev nor host the Erev. So let's say you have a Beishar, you have an Achsadra, you have a Merpeses, you have any one of these non-residential houses in the Chatzar. So you can't house the Erev. Fine. But you know what you can do? You can house the Shituf. That you can do. The Shituf, again, as we discussed time and again, Shituf is basically Erev, just on a larger scale. An Erev unifies a Chatzer. A Shituf unifies all the Chatzers together with one Mavui. All the Chatzers that are surrounding one Mavui, in order to unify those areas, so what we do is we create a Shituf. It's basically the same thing as an Erev. A couple of minor differences as we noted along the way. Where do I place the Shituf? So the answer is I put it in the Chatzer. I can't, as the Gemara is about to point out, I can't put it in the Mavui. It has to go into a Chatzer. But it doesn't have to go into a house in the Chatzer, just it simply has to go into a Makom HaMishtamer, a guarded place in the Chatzer. So your Beis Achsadra would not be good for the Erev Chatzeros, but it'd be fine for the Shituf Mavo. Chutz Mi'aver Mavui. The only place I can't put the Shituf is just in the air, meaning I can't just put it anywhere in the Chatzer, right, laying it out in the sun. In other words, it has to be in a guarded area. So my Kamash Malantanina, the Gemara points out, okay, all this was a halacha set over by Rav Yehuda Breid, Rav Shmuel. Good. But the Gemara now wants to know, it seems like all this information we've gone through before. So the Gemara says, Tanina, I know it's in this Erev, Bebe Shach, Sajram, and Pesach, Seno Erev. So if I put my Erev down in any one of these non-residential houses, it's not going to be an Erev. Erev Adolo Havi, Ashit of Havi. So again, we could just simply read a very simple diak into the Mishnah. Mishnah doesn't say it explicitly, but still kind of reads into the Mishnah. Mishnah sounds like you can't put an air over there, but if you want to put a shituf over there, that would be fine. Ha, the Beishar Diachid, the Avid Amavu, it's the Rechlei. The Gemara says, you're right. The basic point of Rav Yehuda already has been expressed in the Mishnah. Granted. But there are two specific points that he made, which we didn't necessarily see in the Mishnah. Number one, Beishar Diachid, that if the gatehouse only opens up into one other house, so it's not a Beishar. So that point you didn't see in the Mishnah, so that you needed Rav Yehuda for. And the other point is that when I lay down my sheet of Mavoi, it can't be in the airspace of the Chatzer, it has to be in a guarded area. Also, we didn't see that in the Mishnah, and once again, that's why I needed Rav Yehuda. So, it's directly Delo Tanan, Tanya Nami Hachi, the Gemara notes now, we have a Brisa that makes exactly the same point as well, which is, Anosin Eseruva Bebe Shach, Sajram, Impressus of a Chatzer, Uve Mavoi Hareze Erev. That if I put down my Erev in any one of these houses, a Beishar, an Achsaj, an Merpeses, or if I put it down the Chatzir of the Mavui, that is a good Erev. Now, already you realize the Brisa's got issues, or we have problems understanding the Brisa, right? In other words, what do you mean it's good? It's not good. Our Mishnah told us it's not good. V'atana names the Erev, so Ema Harez the Shituf. So the Gemara says, you're right, the Brisa, at its face value, at its superficial look, cannot read the way it's reading. We know that the Erev has to go into somebody's house and somebody's residential home. So what is the Brisa obviously talking about? It's not talking about Erev, it's talking about Shituf. We made this observation also in the past. Sometimes when the Mishnah is talking about a Shituf, sometimes it uses the word Erev. So over here, it doesn't even have to change the words of the Brisa. Erev over here just is to be understood in the context of Shituf. So Erev is a Shituf. Shituf b'mavu lo minter. So the Gemara says, now wait a second. So you, as we already went over, you can't put the Shituf in the Mavoi. It's not guarded over there. Ema b'chatzer shebemavoi. So the Gemara says, okay, again, another correction we're going to make in the Braisa. You don't put the Shituf in the Mavoi itself. That doesn't work. You put the Shituf in a chatzer of the Mavoi. And as we learned even more, not just the chatzar of the mavli, but also in a guarded area in the chatzar. Doesn't have to be in a house, just has to be in a protected area. Okay. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel b'nei chabur shayim mesubim v'kiddush alem ayom. So, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel again has the b'nei chabur. We've seen this before in the Masechta. They were sitting down, and they were already engaged in the meal. Again, I mentioned this before. I don't understand why these Friday afternoon meals pop up so often in the Gemara. Come up a couple times in Erevin, comes up at the end of Pesachim, these Friday afternoon meals. It seems like the most inopportune time to start having a big meal. Okay, but it happened. And so you had a Friday afternoon meal, and now Kiddush Alem Hayom. So now as the day is coming to a close, and now it's turning into Shabbos, Pasha Ala Shulchan Samchan Alem Mishum Erev. So now they got to worry about, oh, we didn't put up an Erev. Well, we're here already, we're eating together, bread's on the table, good. So we're going to call this bread now our Erev. The Amr Lamishum Shitav. Now we have two versions of this brisa. What the first version is that the bread serves as an Erev, and the second version of it is that the bread will serve as a Shitav. Amr Rava v'lo pligin, and Rava says, now both versions are sustainable. Kan b'mesubin b'bayis, kan b'mesubin b'chatzer. And it's very simple, meaning if we're all resting in the house, so then it sort of works as an Erev. Because again, who's hosting the Erev? It's got to be a homeowner, a residential homeowner. He's got to be hosting the Erev. So if we're feasting on Friday afternoon in somebody's house, so and the bread's here anyway, so now this bread could double as our Erev Chatzeres.
If there are two Chatzer, there's nothing else. They could also, the Shizuk could serve for the Chatzer.
That was a debate. Well, let me just finish this and I'll come back. So, Kam b'mesubim b'chatzer, and if what they're doing is eating outside, having a little picnic on Friday afternoon, and everyone's eating outside and there's bread outside, so as we already know, that can't work as our Erev Chatzeres because that has to be hosted in somebody's home. So what are we doing when we're eating outside and we're pointing to the bread? That's going to be working as our sheet of mavui. Okay, let's go back to the discussion that we had earlier. Sheet of mavui, if I set it up, do I have to also set up an Erev Chatzeros? So you remember that was a machlokis, if I remember correctly. Machlokis between the Chacham and Rab Meir. And Rab Meir is machmir. And one of those strange instances in Erevin where we tend to be machmir like Rabbi Meir. Where, right, if I remember correctly, Rav Paskin like Rabbi Meir, which means that you also have to set up an Erev as well. Why?
Just
right? Okay, correct. In other words, we just want to remind the children that there's something called an Erev. We don't want the children to grow up not knowing about Erev Chatzer. So therefore, it's an Erev, but for chinuch purposes, not because we need unification. Unification has already been accomplished by the Shituf. Okay, also, if I remember correctly, we also said that if your shitav happens to be bread, so then that could you could double dip with that. Meaning that could serve then as your shitav and as your Erev, according to everybody. Which, by the way, is exactly what we do in the Bizmanenu. Right, nowadays, what do? We take a box of matzah, we set it up as our Erev. And actually, we do two things with it. We're setting up as a shitav and we're setting up as an Erev as well. Which also explains, by the way, another somewhat nutty thing that we do. Where do we put it? Meaning, this is universal minug. Where is the box of matzahs held? In the shul. Right? It's a funny place to put it. In other words, we just got done learning in the Gemara, it should be in somebody's home, especially if it's an Erev. So, the explanation is very simple. It's not an Erev. It's a Shituf. Meaning that fundamentally, what that box of matzah represents is a Shituf. It's a Shituf Mavui. But it's also bread. So because it's bread, so it basically doubles. It doubles as your shituf, and it's going to double as an Erev as well. But because primarily it's a shituf, so that's why it's kept in the, that's why it can be kept in the shul. The shul is not a residential house.
There's an assumption that this afternoon meal, they're all neighbors living around the same
concert. Yeah, but it's a block party. Block party, Friday afternoon. Okay. The, So the Gemara now continues. Tanya de Masayel, we have a brisa supportive of what exactly what you just said. So where do I put the Erev Chatzer? I put in the Chatzer. Where do I put the Sheet of Mavui? I put in the Mavui. Now, aren't both those points wrong? Right? Then didn't we just go 0-2? So Vavina by Eruv Chatzeres b'Chatzer. What are you talking about? That's exactly what we just got done learning in the Mishnah. That's exactly what you're not supposed to do. You cannot put it in your Chatzer or any house which just doesn't qualify as a residential home. So we're going to make one very important correction, and that is, it's not that the Eruv is put into the Chatzer, it's put in a house in the Chatzer, I guess as opposed to a house in somebody else's Chatzer. And as long as we're in that correction, so now we're going to correct the next part of the Brisa as well, which is that the Brisa says, where do I put the sheets of Mavui? In the Mavui. No, we don't put it in the Mavui, we put it in a Chatzer of the Mavui. Again, it's a more protected place, it's a more guarded place. It doesn't have to go in somebody's house, but it has to go in the Chatzer of the Mavui. Okay, and now we move on to the next part of the Mishnah, and that is, of course, Tfisas Yad. The Mishnah says that if I have Tfisas Yad in your house, so then your house is my house. Regarding Erevin, we're already unified. So the Mishnah now, the Gemara now is going to help us understand a little bit better. Give me some sort of definition of what that means. What is exactly Tfisas Yad? Hey Chidami Tfisas Yad. I'm sorry, let me read the heading. Rav Yehuda Amar Yemeshan Tfisas Yad v'chule. Hey Chidami Tfisas Yad. So the Gemara now wants to know, what is that? What is an example? Kagon. Chatzeru Shal Bunyas Ben Bunyas. So the Gemara just simply points to a person, a very wealthy individual. And the Gemara says, you see him? That's an example. So that's great. So if we lived in the time of the Gemara, this example would be perfect for us. We'd speak this example. But, so only a short 1,700 years later, and so for us it's a little bit difficult, we don't know who the Gemara is referring to. Take a look at Rashi. Bunyas ben Bunyas, Rashi writes, Ashir hava, Uma shel batin shebechatzel l'acherim, v'ayelo kelem bekulam, shemitoch oshran hayelo kelem harbe. So Rashi says he was unbelievably wealthy. Okay, we'll talk more about his wealth later on. But he was unbelievably wealthy. In fact, he had a chatzer. All the houses were owned by him. And he lent his chatzer, his houses, to other people. Right? You want a Shabbos house? No problem. Here, take that one. You want one also? Okay, good. You'll take that one. And so a number of people borrowed houses. But what he did in all those houses is he kept his stuff. Okay? Can I give you a better definition of what stuff is? Well... Right, he had a lot. It's not me saying this. Rashi says this. He had Kalim Harbe. He had a lot of stuff. And he just kind of spread it out over all the houses. So in other words, wherever house you were, even if somebody else occupied it, it had something of his in it. Therefore, vis-a-vis Erevin, it's his house. Now, it's interesting, by the way. It sounds very clear from the Gemara that had there been none of his stuff in that house, for Erevin purposes, it's not him. In terms of home ownership, of course he's a home owner. We're not disputing that. We're not arguing with that. There's nothing to argue with that. But in terms of Erevin, if you borrow somebody's house, that's what it sounds like from the Gemara. If you borrow somebody's house, and it's, you know, and you have all rights to the house, to the usage of the house, you know, it's like it's your house. It's certainly true by renter.
You're
a sofa or a shawl. You see, the Rashi, if I can be precise about Rashi's language, Rashi says shawl. So it's a bigger chiddush, admittedly. And I'm certainly not saying that I'm right, but that's certainly how it sounds like.
We have discussed socher before, but never
shalom. Socher we discussed. Socher is undoubtedly the renter is the owner of the house, vis-a-vis Shabbos, vis-a-vis Erevin. There's no question about that. Here, it's a bigger chiddush. We're talking about shalom right now. But okay, anyway.
But he has his stuff.
Okay, so good. So in other words, but because Bunyas has his stuff in that house, so therefore, for Erevin purposes, it's Bunyas' house. Good. Also, come to Rabbi Amalu, Penu Malkum Leben Manem. So now the Gemara tells us more about Bunyas, a little bit more about Bunyas. He comes in front of Revi and he says, you know, make room, Leben Mea Manem. Right? Somebody who is Ben Mea Manem is coming in. Right? In other words, an important person, right? You got to clear some room for an important person coming in. By the way, it's funny. In other words, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, he was the wealthiest person. The Gemara says, I don't remember where the Gemara is, you'll forgive me. The Gemara says that anyone who is extraordinarily wealthy after 120 years comes to Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, you know, I'm really sorry, I was wealthy, meaning I had loved to have spent my life learning Torah, but I was very wealthy and I Marbe Nechasim, Marbe Daga. I just had a lot on my mind. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to say to him, look, we have Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, who was the wealthiest person, and somehow he managed to find time for Torah. Finding time for Torah, it's an understatement. I mean, he was the embodiment of Torah. We have Torah nowadays because of Rebbe. So, in other words, the wealth is simply not going to be a good excuse. In the meantime, however, this guy goes over to Rebbe and says, Penu Makom, right? Make room because Ben Me'amaneh. a person worth mea money, which apparently is a lot of money, so he's coming in. I'll say in a shachrinam lo pnumakum leben masayim mana. So make room for someone who's worth 200 mana. So I'm a lefan of Rebbe Yishma b'Rav Yosi. Rebbe Aviv Shalzeh Yeshlo Elos Finos Beyam. So now he's getting outside information confirming that this man that's coming actually is worth a lot. This person that's going to come and visit Rebbe, he has 1,000 ships in the ocean. But that's the person that's going to come. Mm-hmm. Correct. So the Elos Finos V'Biyam V'Chenegdam Elof Ayaros B'Yabasha, and he owned 1,000 cities. Amar lo L'cheshatigi Eitzel Aviv. Amar lo Al Tishagre B'Kelem Halalo. So now, Rebbe didn't realize that this person that was talking was the actual son. Meaning, Rebbe didn't, right, Rebbe, right, this person that was declaring, you know, make room for this person, that was actually the son of, it was, right, the Gemara described him earlier as Bunyas ben Bunyas. So in other words, Bunyas, the son of Bunyas, right, named after his father. Okay? So when he was saying make room for this person who's wealthy, he was actually describing his father. Rebbe didn't understand that. Rebbe didn't know that. Why not? So as the Gemara is clear, and Rashi is even clearer, because when Bunyas came in, he wasn't dressed really nice. And so he looked at this guy and he thought, okay, you know, nice guy, but not wealthy. So, don't ever send your son like that again. Dress the way he is. Meaning, he should dress the part. He should look nicer. I'm sorry, Lifanai.
The father should get that.
What?
He tells his son, tell your father to wear.
No, I assume the other way. All right, whatever. I assume that it was Rebbe giving mustard to the kid. Next time, kid, don't send your son dressed like that. That's how I assume the Gemara reads. Okay, Rebbe Mechabed Hashirim, Rebbe Akiva Mechabed Hashirim. Now, it sounds like, in other words, there should be a certain amount of respect given to wealthy people. That's kind of intuitive, by the way. I feel that wealthy people get respected whether the Gemara tells us this or not. But, right, what's important to us is that the Gemara tells us this. That, in other words, you must respect wealthy people. Rebbe gave special kavod to wealthy people. Rebbe Akiva gave kavod to wealthy people. The Gemara tells us, Rabbi Mechaber Hashirim, Rabbi Kiva Mechaber Hashirim, Kedidarish Rava Bar Mari, Yashav Olam Lifnei Elokim, Chesed Ve'emes Man. I'm sorry, Man Yenatsruhu. So, the Chesed Ve'emes Man Yenatsruhu, Rashi says the word man over here, from like man, by Lashon Mezonos, meaning they're the people who sustain the world. And so therefore you have to accord them a special amount of respect. Emes Ayeshav Olam Lifnei Elokim. When does the world settle in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Bisman shechesav emes man yinatzruhu. That's when wealthy people are doling out staka and making sure that the poor are being supported. So in other words, the special covenant has to be afforded to the wealthy people so that they continue to settle the world. Rav Baruch Hanamar Kigon Yasa Shamachareisha. The Gemara takes us back now to Tfisas Yad. Okay, Tfisas Yad means as follows. Again, We diverted for just a moment with the story of Bunyas ben Bunyas, but Tfisas Yad basically means, I got stuff in your house, therefore, vis-a-vis Erevin, that's my house. So what's an example of Tfisas Yad? So the Gemara is going to give a couple of actual practical examples. Up until this point in time, all we did is just simply say, yeah, like Bunyas. But now the Gemara is going to speak now in more detail. Kigon Yasa Shamachareisha, the handle of the plow. It is a little bit of a thing, but we're going to speak out why exactly this was the example. I'm Rav Nachman Tandabei Shmuel. Davra Hanita B'Shabbos Oser. Davra She'eno Hanita B'Shabbos Eino Oser. Little counterintuitive. Basically, what the Gemara is saying is as follows. If it's a Davra Hanita, meaning it's a non-muksa item, so then, and I stored it by you, that's not me having residence by you. Why? As Rashi points out, if it's a non-muksa item, that means that I can come over anytime I want, pick it up and take it out of your house. Meaning that's not an item that's going to stay by you over Shabbos. However, if it's a muksa item, so now, and I left it by you over Shabbos, that means it's going to be there for the duration of Shabbos. It's muksa. Therefore, none of us are going to go over, pick it up on Shabbos, take it out on Shabbos. Rashi writes, as a result of that, that will be considered a tfisas yad. Which then goes on to explain, by the way, why the example that was given first was Yasei Shemar Machareisha, the handle of the plow. Plow is muktzah. Plow is a klisha machar le'isr. The thing that you primarily do with a plow is plow, one of the 39 malachas. So therefore the plow itself is a muktzah item. So if I have a muktzah item by you, that's considered tfisas yad. That's as if I'm dwelling by you. So there's no eruv requirement. However, if it's a non-muksa item, so that's not a tfisas yad. The Gemara says we have a brisa that makes this exact point. Ayinam ehachi, yesh lo tevel, yesh lo ashashis, v'chol davar she'eino nito b'shabbos, eino oser. So if I have tevel, right, second time in the past couple days, we use the example of tevel as being a muksa item. If I have tevel by you, right, pay dalit, just 2 days ago, we used the tevel example. If I have tevel by you, so that now means that it's a muksa item. I live by you. I'm by you. My house, your house is my house, and so therefore there's no muksa. There's no eruv requirement. If, however, I have choldav, v'choldavasheno nitzav b'shabbaseno oser. And if it's something which and anything which is eno nitzav, anything which is a muksa item, makes me a homeowner by you. Okay, adka. Right, so in other words, it comes out based on this concept tfisas yad, we can circumvent an eruv of need. Meaning by me just taking my stuff and spreading it out over everybody's house, obviously they have to agree, which is part of the point. But in other words, by spreading it out, correct, then at that point in time now I have a tfisas yad, and there is simply then no requirement of an eruv. Yeah, it sounds that way. It sounds like he becomes the unifier. I'm not sure, meaning I understand your question, and I'm not sure, but it certainly sounds that way. Okay. Hamaniach based of aholach lishbos b'ir acheres. Okay, snowbirds. Okay, there are none left. We're in the month of June. So now I speak to the actual residents of Boca Raton. So the question is, in other words, there are a lot of empty homes, right? A lot of people leave their houses for the summer and enjoy the great north. And so, vis-a-vis Erevin, the question is a really simple question. Do they have to contribute in absentia? Right? Simple question. So the Mishnah gives us a short Mishnah, a short Gemara, nothing less than four opinions on this matter. That's all. So you leave your house to go to another city. So, Meir says, your house is still a home. Even though no one's living in the home, it's an uninhabited home, but an uninhabited home is still considered a home. So Rashi says it very fundamentally. If you take a look at that first Rashi in the Mishnah, Hareza Oser, Didira Balobalim Shma Dira. A non-inhabited home is still considered a home, and therefore you still need to contribute. Now it's a little bit strange, you're not there, but okay, in other words, it doesn't matter, you're not there. Through a shliach, right, in absentia, through a proxy, you have to contribute to the Erev, and it does not matter if we're talking about a Jew or talking about a non-Jew as well.
How long do you have to be away?
I mean, we're just talking about for the duration of Shabbos. I mean, really, that's the discussion of this Mishnah. Now, by the way, when...
It was in the guy who... I'm with her, but I have something in the house. And he, the guy...
No, but in other words, no, the thesis, Yad, is that we're both living in this chatzir, and I'm living in my house, and I have something in your house. So that means that now we're unified.
Right.
Here, it's just my home. I don't have another house. This is my home.
Right.
So I just happen, I know I'm going to be... I'm not there. No one has it. If somebody had tfisas yad in my house, so fine. No one has a tfisas yad in my house.
So why would he think that because he's not there, that all of a sudden...
Well, we're going to see. Just wait one second. We just covered the first opinion. Now, this, by the way, just an important point, that when Reb Meir says a non-Jew, obviously what Reb Meir does not mean is that the non-Jew needs to contribute to the Erev, as we've learned time and again, right? We need to lease residence from him, but again, the point is still the same point. That, in other words, if the non-Jew is going away for Shabbos, I still have to be socher reshus from the guy. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Oster. Now, Rabbi Yehuda goes the exact opposite direction of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that both for Jew and non-Jew alike, even if they go away, they still need to be factored into the Eruv? According to Rabbi Yehuda, no. If you're not living here for Shabbos, you're not here. You're simply not here. Rashi goes the other way. Take a look at Rashi in the Mishnah. He knows the Delav Shmei Dira. Meaning, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's simply you're simply not regarded as a residence. And so therefore, you don't have to be factored into the Eruv, and that would be true for both Jew and non-Jew. Okay, a third opinion, we're going to create a split. I'm Rabbi Yossi, Omer Nachri Oster, Yisrael Eino Oster. So Rabbi Yossi creates a split right down the middle, where basically if you're a Jew going away, you don't have to be regarded for Eruv purposes. If you're a non-Jew going away, you do have to be regarded for Eruv purposes. What's the difference between Jew and non-Jew? So we don't need Rashi, we just read on in the Mishnah. She'ein derech Yisrael lavo b'Shabbos. Because when it comes to a Jew, once he goes away for Shabbos, he's not coming back. He can't come back. Meaning, by going away for Shabbos, what presumably that means is that he has now fled Tchum. He's gone to another town, another Tchum. So he can't come back for Shabbos. And so consequently, what that means is that we don't have to regard his house. As opposed to a non-Jew, has no Tchum concerns. He's a non-Jew. He doesn't have to be a Shomer Shabbos. So therefore, it's possible that even though he went away, even though he went far away, he could still come back on Shabbos. Rashi points out, what does Rav Yossi fundamentally feel? Does he fundamentally agree with Rabbi Meir or with Rabbi Yehuda? So Rashi points out that fundamentally Rabbi Yossi agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. Right? Rashi says, Rabbi Yossi namisfir lei lav shmei dira. Right? In other words, fundamentally, you don't live there, you're not there. But by the Jew, a concern, right? Rashi writes, Mi unachri oster shem, I'm sorry, by a non-Jew, thank you. By a non-Jew, a concern. But mi unachri oster shema yavayom. But in other words, he fundamentally agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that it's just simply not a residence, but for the fear that the non-Jew may come back. Okay, so far we have now 1, 2, 3 opinions. Opinion number one, Rabbi Meir, that even though it's uninhabited, it's still considered a home, both for Jew and non-Jew. Number two, Rabbi Yehuda, it is never considered a home if it's not inhabited, and that'd be true for Jew and non-Jew. And then Rabbi Yossi has a split decision. For Jew, if he leaves for Shabbos, it's not a home. There's no Eruv requirement from him. He doesn't have to be a contributor. But for a non-Jew, however, there is a Eruv of concern, which means that we have to be so chereshus from the non-Jew, even if he's going away.
Maybe I'm missing something. When you say report, if you have tefisas yad, like you're there, but you're not there. But here, you have a house, you just happen not to be there, right. But you have tefisas yad.
Right. So, I mean, to me, the distinction is obvious. In the case of tefisas yad, you're living in the chatzer and he's living in the chatzer.
You're there.
And
you're
so you're there. And on top of that also, he was nice enough to give you some space, some portion of his house to you. But here, he's gone. He's gone for Shabbos. Okay, Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu hinech beisav alach lishbos eitzel bito. Now, Rabbi Shimon's going to give us a fourth opinion over here. It's hard to imagine that there is actually a fourth opinion, but we manage. And Rabbi Shimon says that, look, even if you leave your house, not to go to some other town, but in other words, you're going to spend Shabbos by your daughter. Eitzobita ba'oser ha'ir. And you're not even living town, it's in the same city. Eino oser. Shekvar hisia milibo. Meaning you're going to your daughter for Shabbos, you're committed. I'm going to my daughter's for Shabbos. So, that's it. And so therefore, no chance that you're going to come back home. Meaning you're by your daughter, you didn't make any food for Shabbos. So that means that you, as the homeowner, no longer need to contribute, according to Rabbi Shimon. So really, it's the most makel of makel positions. Meaning it's not even you left town. You're in town, but you're spending Shabbos by your daughter. So you're no longer considered a homeowner, a residential homeowner vis-a-vis Eruv, and there's no need for you to contribute for that particular Shabbos.
You're within the town?
You're within the city. You're here.
The first three cases, do they consider an automatic veto for the Jew?
No, meaning in the first three opinions?
Yeah, I mean the opinions, yeah.
The first three opinions, again, if veto would be if in other words, let's go like this. According to Rabbi Yehuda, where it's not considered a dira, there's no veto requirement, there's nothing. Meaning you're just simply a non-factor in terms of the Eruv. There's a house here, but because it's not inhabited, we get to ignore it. According to Rabbi Meir, no, we don't get to ignore it. You have to be a contributor. And if you don't contribute, So then, yes. So then you could do bittul. I'm assuming. Okay. Why does the Mishnah give the example of the father going to his daughter for Shabbos? Is there anything behind that? The Gemara says, "Oh, yes, there is." Amar Rav Halachika Rabbi Shimon. So first of all, Rav passes like Rabbi Shimon, right? Intuitive, meaning it's the most makel position, and generally we take on the most makel position vis-a-vis Shabbos. Although, oddly enough, however, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, that split position, even though the Gemara says otherwise. Okay. Anyway, but Amar Rav Halachika Rabbi Shimon v'dafka bito. Now, everyone's going to enjoy this next bit of Gemara as it speaks to a truth of life. Our Mishnah was specific in the example that I gave. It gave the example where he was going to his daughter for Shabbos. Aval. Bino lo. But if he's going to his son for Shabbos, he's not going to vacate his home, at least not mentally. Because he knows that when he goes to his son for Shabbos, that means that he's also going to be experiencing his daughter-in-law. No, correct. His daughter-in-law. Right. And, I mean, the Gemara is saying this very clearly, meaning that the relationship between dad and his daughter-in-law could at times be cantankerous. And they don't always get along. And it's clear from the Gemara that there's that very strong possibility that he's not right. although he said, I'm going to my son's for Shabbos, he may end up right back home. Rashi says it straight out. I mean, you really cannot dance around this. I mean, it's entertaining, but it's entertaining simply because it really speaks to a truth that I think at one point or another we all experienced, or maybe just me. But the
why does he give the mother-in-law case?
Right?
I guess
let me just give me a moment. I'll come back to that. So in other words, as Rashi points out, so if it's dad going to his son, meaning his daughter-in-law, so he's ain't where. Well, I want to read the Rashi because it really Rashi really spells it out. The no, we'll get to the Kalba in just a moment. The ava etzo kalaso shuhu. Sorry, ain adam meisiach daito mebeito lador etzo kalaso. Because even though you left your house, you didn't mentally leave your house. Shuhu tiskotet viotse, because expectation of a fight occurring as he's visiting his daughter-in-law, and therefore he's going to turn around and go home. So therefore, it's Eino Mesiach Das. As opposed to when he's going to his daughter, fine, his son-in-law's fine, him and his son-in-law, no problem. Right? I know. Funny but true. All right, men somehow find a way to get along, but, you know, men and women, you know. Okay, it's not always smooth. And then the Gemara says, and just in case you really didn't understand or didn't get the point, the Gemara says, let's give an aphorism. There's an expression that really solidifies this whole idea. Ishi people say, Novach bach kalba, the dog barks at you, oh, that means come in. But noch bagoryasa, but if the female dog barks at you, pogue, that means it's time to leave. Okay, if you understand, great. And if you don't understand, come to me later. Okay. Okay, and we go on. Okay, we are up to the next Mishnah now. Okay, we're back to water. Water's been a big topic throughout the course of this Masechta. Yesterday over Shabbos, thank you, Stuart, for taking the daf yesterday. Yesterday over Shabbos, more discussions about using. He's not here. I'm thanking him in abstention. I'm all right. Just. All right, I'm speaking. First of all, right, it's on record. That's number one. Number two, I'm speaking to the Gemara. It just says, even if you're away, still you have to pay him attention. You have to pay him mind. So the I called him to thank him as well. So anyway, so the and to find out how far he got. The Gemara starts off now with more discussions about water and walls and how walls basically serve as a way of partitioning between water. So the contra case here is a very simple case. You have a pit, actually, which is shared by two chaser. So in other words, the border of each chaser is actually at a well. And it's not a well. Well is not a good way to describe it. It's a pit. It's a hole in the ground. And through rain, basically, now there's an accumulation of water in this pit that is centered between two chaseros. And so now the question over here is a really simple question. How are we actually going to separate the waters between the two chaseros, so that now I can come in from my side and collect water from my side of the chaser, and the neighboring chaser can do the same from his side as well? do you need an actual physical partition of the wall, or is a halachic partition going to be good enough? And even and let's hang on that second part of the question even a little bit more. Even if a halachic partition is enough, what defines a halachic partition between these two? That's what we're going to be discussing over the course of our Mishnah. So the Mishnah says there's got to be a wall separating the pit. Bain milamata. Whether it's below or whether it's in the rim. The Mishnah uses really ambiguous terms to describe this wall that's separating the two mechitzos. But it comes out, though, however, that according to this Mishnah, as long as I have a wall, again, somewhere below or somewhere mitoch ogno, in the rim, so that would be good enough. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Beit Shammai Omer Malamata, Beit Hillel Omer Malamala. According to Shimon Gamliel, this actually serves as a debate between Rabbi Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says it has to be below, Beit Hillel says it has to be above. Again, very ambiguous reference to what we're exactly talking about. Above what, below what, relative to what. And then, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, lo te'e mechitza gedola min hakosto shebineihem. So Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm not really following this whole discussion. Meaning, remember, there are two chatzeros. What does that mean, the two chatzeros? There already is a wall partitioning between the two chatzeros. That means that there's already a wall running over the pit. Has to be. Otherwise, we don't, in other words, how are we dividing the two chatzeros? So if there's already a wall over the two pits, so Rav Yehuda says, we're divided. What more do I need? I don't need another wall going into the pit, separating the actual water itself. So Rav Yehuda says, I'm not really following the whole discussion.
Couldn't the water itself serve as a point of demarcation between the two?
The water, meaning even if there wasn't a wall, meaning if there was a ditch,
right.
Yeah, with the proper dimensions, absolutely correct. Right, we learned earlier that if you have a ditch that's 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide, so then yes, it would serve as a division. So your point is very well taken. But in other words, under any circumstance, Rav Yehuda says, look, normally we have a wall separating the two. A wall is a wall. Now, what needs obviously clarification is these terms that are thrown out in our Mishnah, what do they mean? The basic idea we understand. The waters need to be separated between one chatzar and the other chatzar. That part I get. And exactly where that wall is situated, so the Mishnah throws out terms of lamata, mitoch ogno, right within the rim. But like, what are we even talking about? So the Gemara is going to give us a wide range of opinions. Amar avhuna lamata lamata mamish, ulamala lamala mamish. V'zeb v'zeb abor. So when we say lamata lamata, take it literally. In other words, when we say it below, we mean mamish, meaning inside the pit. Right, Rashi writes, meaning the wall doesn't even need to hit the water itself. It just has to be with inside the pit. And lamala, meaning actually above. Right, above the area of the pit. No. What the relative point is over here that we're saying above and below is not the edge, is not the rim of the pit, but actually the water level. Lamata means lamata min amayim, lamala means lamala min amayim. So I'm like Rabbi Rav Chanala Bai Hadamer Rav Yehuda lamata min amayim, Maishna lamata mamish, Delo de arive mayim, Maya lamata min amayim nami, Hariva maya. I really don't understand, asks the Gemara. Meaning if below means it's got to be below the surface area of the water, so what? The wall's not hitting the ground. So in other words, even if it's below the surface area of the water, so there's an understanding that halachically they're divided, even though physically the water is mixing with one another. So what difference does it make whether it's below the surface area of the water, above the surface area of the water, when all said and done, there's a wall in the pit? So I don't understand your position. Why does it need to be below the actual surface area of the water? Tefach. You have to be able to see the wall, at least a tefach of the wall. And in other words, I'm sorry. Visu had Amar of Yehuda lamala lamala min amayim maishna lamala mamish delo dariva maya lamala min amayim nami hariva maya. And let's even challenge Rav Yehuda's position, where he says above means above the wall and below means below the wall, below the surface area of the pit. So the Gemara says, I understand, in both cases, there's a mixture of the water. That when the walls go down, it has to go all the way down, up to a tefach of from the actual floor bed of the pit. Fine. So in other words, so basically what comes out now is that this lamata position, although we initially understood it to mean lamata meaning just submerged under the water, the Gemara basically now corrects. No, it doesn't mean submerged under the water. It means also basically either going down to the ground or at least within a tefach of the ground. So the Gemara says, Ve'ala hadam Rav Yehuda kara arba materas b'chorva, v'rav Nachman ama rava bar avua kara arba'a materas b'mayim. So the Gemara notes, you're telling me now that the walls have to go actually to the ground and basically hit all the way to the ground. The Gemara says that meanwhile we have two statements made by Rav Yehuda, which makes it sound like it doesn't have to hit all the way to the ground. Meaning Rav Yehuda says that a kora arba. Arba over here means not four tfachim, but four amos. Okay? If you take a look at Rashi goes on to explain. Korah hatchuva mechoma lechoma bechorva kider chorvas anafalos v'nesharim b'em koros v'yesh berach ba'arba'a v'himutal sarachva motel taltel tachteha. Basically you're allowed to carry underneath this area. The amar shnei chudah yordim v'sos min desavar lak rabbi shma b'rav yosi the amar mechitza tluya materes. It's a suspending wall. The edge of these beams come down. Halachically come down. A concept we know elsewhere as pitikra yored v'sosim. Now, v'leisa chosak v'sei. Now, the Gemara notes that this halacha doesn't fall like him. Olahachi nakar arba dechi amar chud in yordim v'sosim yehi ben chala. All right, the rest of Rashi right now, no. But in other words, the basic idea is that the edges are coming down. So they have this idea that basically walls halachically come down. Rav Nachman also says, top of the next amud, korah. Arba'a materas b'mayim. So haka'azol dali le'idach yisa umaisi. Kimlu l'rabbanan de'ein dali me'halach yosem me'arba tfachim tachas kora. Mi'aha areva mayim. So the Gemara says, still, even though there's a halachic barrier separating the walls, but nevertheless there is still communication of water. So the Gemara says, whenever we're talking about water, we have to understand, we've said this already a number of times, that the Chachamim were Mekel. Anytime we have a separation of water, of walls of water, so the Chachamim were Mekel by water. Can I use a Mechitza Tluya, a hanging wall when it comes to a Chorva? So Amalei, Ein Mechitza Tluya, Mater Salah B'mayim, Kal Shekil Chachamim B'mayim. Nope. The idea of a hanging wall only applies by water. But in other words, if I have a hanging wall and the concept of good achis where the wall continuously comes down, that's true regarding water. Right? Water is so important. Water allows us to live and survive. And so the chachamim were making when it comes to mechitza tuli, when it comes to water. But a mechitza tuli in general, that the chachamim did not allow. And so over here in this case as well, by a mechitza tuliya in water, yes. When it comes, generally speaking, the answer is going to be no. Okay, so coming back to our mission now, and our mission says that I have a pit between two wells. So according to, we have a machlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, where the wall needs to be, so basically the position is like Beit Hillel, milamala, above. Meaning that the wall doesn't have to come down to the ground. Why doesn't the wall have to come down to the ground? Mechitza tluya b'mayim. That the chacham will make it when it comes to mechitza tluya, when it comes to water. Okay, we'll stop over here. So again, three big topics that we covered over the course of today. First topic today was that in order to contribute and be a host to an Eruv, you have to be a residential home. Non-residential homes cannot nor be contributors to the Eruv, don't need to be contributors to the Eruv, nor be the host to the Eruv. We spoke also in that Mishnah that this idea, Trisas Yad, that if I have stuff in other people's home, him and I are already considered like we're unified. Second big issue is, what if you leave your house for Shabbos? Are you considered a residential homeowner for this Shabbos? Four-way machlokas, the halachas like Rav Yossi. If you're a Jew, you're not coming back. If you're a non-Jew, so there's a chance you're going to come back. And finally, the last topic that we covered today is have a pit between two chatzeros. How do I divide the two pits so that each chatzer can take water? Machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. We'll talk more tomorrow in terms of what the halacha is.